Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 85 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guests on today's podcast are Peter Draculich and Dan Gagne. They are the co-founders of 52 Launch. 52 Launch is the company that helps entrepreneurs and startups become a business by launching a new product. There is an exhausting amount of work required to launch a product and or a business. 52 Launch helps their clients reduce the time it takes to get to revenue, scale it for volume, and accelerate growth. They opened in 2016 and are based out of Framingham. Peter and Dan share the story of how they met. Each of them had already successfully started their own companies in the past. They realized they could each help solve a part of an entrepreneur's journey, and they decided to join forces to create 52 Launch. They've been pitched over 6,000 ideas throughout the past 6 years. Whether you have a drawing on a napkin or a prototype already made, they can help. In this episode, we talk in depth about the full scope of services they provide, from napkin to reality. They've worked with over 200 entrepreneurs and businesses to bring their products to life, some of which have been featured on Shark Tank. So if you have that idea for a revolutionary new product, or maybe a better mousetrap of an existing product, but don't know where to even begin, 52 Launch is where you go. They've put together an incredible process to bring your idea to life. And be sure to listen to the end as Peter and Dan share the advice they give someone looking to start their own business, what they would tell their 18-year-old selves, and how they define success in any given year. And so with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week we have Peter Draculich and Dan Gagne. They're the founders of 52 Launch. How you doing, guys?
Great. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. I'm excited to have you guys on here. I love just the concept of starting businesses and creating products and launching them. And I also love it when I get introduced by fellow podcast guests, as you guys know, Anthony and Lindsay of Stack Tracks Fitness. Yep. They were on here a few weeks ago. They're actually the second appearance they've had on here, from when they initially started the business to when they wanted to talk about the product that you guys helped them launch. They said immediately, we gotta get you guys on here. So I appreciate you guys coming on Boston's Best. I'm excited to get into what it is you guys do.
Awesome. Yeah, we're excited as well. And thank you for reaching out to us, because, you know, I think this is, we're always busy with what we have to do. So just being invited to something like this, appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be fun. So before we get into full services that you guys do and help people, give us a little background on the two of you, how you met, what made you decide to start 52 Launch.
I left the automotive industry. I was, you know, someone that worked for some very large dealer groups. They would acquire new stores. I would go in and turn them around and fix them. I spent a lot of time away from home in the early 2000s and or 2010s to 2013. I decided that I was going to leave the car business, and it keeps dragging you back in. So about 2013, 14, I was off on my own. I have a website more for lead capture called Driving Up Sales. And I was getting calls from people, not from the dealerships that needed to turn their dealers around, but from local individuals or individuals who had an idea or product and said, hey, can you help me drive up sales? So I would meet them. And the idea was pretty good. And the issue was the execution wasn't there. The product sucked. It was the wrong color. It just didn't, it didn't fit. It wasn't, you know, the sales were not the problem. It was the product that was not selling. And I kept saying, shoot, if I could get to people earlier, I could help them. I know what not to do in those mistakes. And I just didn't have that background. And literally someone overheard me at a networking event, and I ran into him the next day. He had some connection to Dan, and he said, hey, I heard what you said last night. And I'm, you know, so I'm pouring my coffee, and he's like, if you want, I think you should meet someone I know. And I said, okay, let's schedule something. He goes, no, if you want to go now, let's go now. I'm like, okay. I got in this guy's car. We drove, you know, across town to Framingham and waited unannounced for about 40 minutes to meet someone I had no idea who I was meeting. And, you know, literally he was gracious enough to invite us in. I sat down, and like, you know, what should have been a 30-minute conversation turned into an entire afternoon. We kind of talked about being both ends of the book, and he has the production side, but for me, I had the marketing side. We were kind of like two bookends, and we were both we were both getting more calls in that space from entrepreneurs looking to get their products to market.
My background, you know, I have a little bit of similarities with Peter. I started, I've been self-employed since I was in my early 20s. So again, in the car business, like Peter, obviously, we both had that, you know, discussion later on when we met that, you know, it wasn't an industry where we saw either one of us long-term. It was a great place to start,
yeah.
Especially when you're in, you know, trying to learn sales. It's either real estate or the car business. So, yeah. You know, you pick one of them and kind of get your feet wet and understand, you know, what it's like to close deals. And I started Source Centra about 25 years ago. And Source Centra, a company that was based right out here, right inside of Boston. And we help people design custom packaging. So, you know, it started off by working with small companies. And as we built our reputation, we ended up selling to companies like Procter & Gamble and Verizon Wireless and Motorola, big companies. And it was a extremely lucrative business to be in the packaging space. It's the second largest industry in the world behind the automobiles industry. Again, had a very successful run. Again, challenge is that working with large companies, you're always going up against bigger companies for competitive quoting process. So it was really a relationship sale. You know, people would buy from us because of the relationship that we had with them. So it was a wonderful business, except it was difficult to scale that business because most of those relationships were established by me. Yeah. So if I were to ever sell the company, it really wouldn't be worth a lot of money because I'd have to go with the company. Right. So again, sticking down that path, I planned on retiring eventually with Source Centra, but I ended up meeting Peter, like you said, and I would get a lot of phone calls from companies looking to manufacture custom packaging or even their product, but at very small quantities. And of course, early on, I realized that you spend just as much time with those people as you do with the large companies. Yeah. The difference is you never get an order or you never get a reorder because the pricing is just so expensive to start out. So when Peter came in to introduce himself, I was letting a client leave my office who had a wonderful product and an idea, but she wasn't funded properly. I was going to jump through hoops and never really get an order. So, you know, she was walking out as Peter was walking in and we started talking and immediately hit it off. And again, neither one of us needed a partner. I never even entertained having one. Yeah. But I could tell that there was some synergy between the two of us. I told Peter, I said, I just let that girl walk out of the office. She has a great product. We can give that a shot. Why don't we work on that together and see where that takes us? And essentially, that's where 52 was born that day.
I mean,
But we had a very successful launch with that entrepreneur. And I learned a lot from Peter, thinking that, you know, you can work with small businesses that actually forget the money side, just have fun again, which is really important to me. I'm a little bit older than Peter, so I'm not really into this business for the money, more so I'm into it for just the pure gratification of not having to call work.
Yeah.
And so what we do is extremely fun and it's extremely rewarding at the end. So obviously if we do all the right things, we're going to make money and that comes, you know, as a secondary option down the road. But that's how we met. And we essentially started, 52 Launch, and 52 Launch ended up acquiring in a reverse acquisition, the bigger company, Source Centra. And we no longer really service those big accounts. I have a couple lingering that I continue to offer services to.
It went pretty quick too, because once I came into your office and we worked on that one project and all of a sudden we had five projects.
Right.
And all of a sudden we're like, okay, maybe we need to get our own office for this type of thing. And then, you know, this is our third office. We've gone from what was the basement, 1,000 square feet?
Probably like 800 square feet to 15,000 square feet in a very short period of time. So it went from...
Yeah, we've moved since the last time we talked. We're in our new facility, which is a lot bigger than the old one.
Yeah, you gave me a quick tour of it that day.
All set up behind us. So, you know, our biggest challenges are just with, you know, COVID was like getting on a location shoot, you know, inviting 12 people to suck the house.
Yeah.
So we've acquired the space here now that we can create our own living room sets, we can create kitchen sets, but whatever we need, we don't have to travel and we can get the shot done in you know, an afternoon.
Okay. Yeah. And I'd love to get into that at some point. So you guys create all the shots in-house. You're limiting all the travel for the most part.
Yeah. We started off, you know, outsourcing all of those services until we realized that we needed to control that more because of timing. You know, it's very difficult, like Peter said, with COVID to get into any location. And we saw the opportunity to move into the space next door, which allowed us to have a beautiful showroom that we can now...
A real podcast room.
And, you know, set up these shoots and stay home. And again, keeping the cost down for our clients, because at the end of the day, every one of our clients struggles with, you know, finances. I mean, it takes you know, takes a village to bring a product to market, and it also takes a little bit of money. Well, yeah. So
yeah. So, so when you guys, I'm sorry, Peter, what were you saying?
No, I agree. The dreams are real and they're attainable, but they do cost some money.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always harder for like, it's maybe like a, you know, a solopreneur to come up with whatever it needs to like get a product to launch. Like that's obviously a difficult part. When you two first met, you said it was what, 2013, 2014? And when did you officially?
It was 2016.
Yeah. So 2016.
I think April is our 6 year from the day that we actually, the day that I walked into his office.
Yeah. And I think it was 2 years ago that 52 acquired Source Centra. Yeah. It took us about 4 years to make sure that we were on the right program. And
yeah, we liked each
other. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was really never an issue because quite frankly, we were so damn busy that it was hard to get into an argument because we just were just so busy. We didn't have time.
Yeah. For that's
it. Good. So, yeah. And of course, we're both older too, so it's a lot easier to understand somebody else, you know, when you're older and have gone through.
Well, I also think that if we both didn't come from the car business, we wouldn't have that foundation, right? Yeah. Like when you come from the car business, it's like military camp. Like, you know, there's a rigid structure to how things are done, and it's the way it's been done for 100 years and it hasn't changed. So, you know, we both have that, I guess, core. So it's business first, right? Like customers come first. It's the way we're both built to make sure that, you know, we get to the end result that we need to for our clients.
Right.
So you launched in, lack of better words, you launched in 2016. How did you guys come up with the name 52 Launch? Is there a meaning behind it? Is it 52 weeks in a year? Or?
Yeah. So that's a question that pretty much every single person asks us, how we named it 52 Launch. And I guess we just got lucky, but it's a funny story. Early on, you know, Pete and I used to, you know, we always have a nice bar set up in whatever office we're in. So, you know, at the end of a Thursday or Friday, we'll have a drink. Apparently we had too much for that one day. We decided to name 52 Launch, but we thought that we could get a product to market in 50 days. So, you know, we just kind of played on the number 2 versus TO. So 50 TO launch, and we said 52 launch. And that's kind of what we thought. Now, of course, you know, that was extremely overzealous.
It takes 50 days to ship cargo. Yeah.
Especially right now.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. We have yet to launch a product in 50 days, and I don't think we ever will.
But it's our core attitude, right? The thing that we've done, Mark, that makes us different than everybody else is our core function is to get the sales as quick as we can, right? So our attitude is, I want to look at, if there's a way to get a product launched in 50 days, we're the only team that would do that. You know, that means what needs to be on that bus to get to the 50-day launch. You know, sometimes things don't make it. And not crucial things, but like if we want to get the sales, to us, inventory is the most important part. You know, some marketing dollars left behind so we can start marketing. And that's really where our success has come from is get to that launch as quick as we possibly can.
Yeah. So we kind of pivoted and we now say that you nailed it, 52 weeks. So we figure it takes about 52 weeks to start getting to some significant revenue. So, but again, at the end of the day, it was us thinking that we could have a very speed driven process to launch products. Now, someday, can we get to that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, we could do it today if all the stars lined up and we really, you know, have been, unfortunately, used to the COVID days. So until that kind of passes by, you know, it does take a little longer than what we were hoping for.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So let's get into the company itself and what like the process looks like. If somebody, say I come to you with an idea for, I don't know, like a new microphone or something, like what does the process look like to you? Do I just show up with like a napkin? Is it like a handmade drawing? And just give us kind of like an idea of what the process looks like.
Yeah. So I'm going to say from my perspective, there's three things that we usually get to see. Someone who has a prototype that's built, and there's two sides to that, right? If they're so stuck on that prototype, usually a prototype that you would make that can be 3D printed is not the prototype that needs to be manufactured. So although it functions and it looks like it would work, it is usually, it's 100% never the way it should be manufactured. So, you know, our prototype process factors or focuses on how something is actually manufactured, what tools, what machinery, you know, what equipment that manufacturer has. And we work backwards from there to design the product. So we'll come to the same look as your prototype. If you're fixated on that, that's a tough one, because if you want, you know, what you want, it just ends up costing so much more. And this is again, where I know what 7,000 wrong products look like in someone's garage.
Yeah.
So my goal ad nauseum is to prevent that, right? So I'd prefer that you don't hire us or that we don't take you on if there's no flexibility. Because at the end, you're building a business, there has to be margin. The other one is the napkin. And if you have some sort of concept on the napkin, meaning you have a good, pretty good premise of a solution that you're, or a problem that you're solving, and that you kind of have an idea of how you need to make it and how it would function, those are great. And then we have a couple, the harder ones are the ones that have this concept, but no idea how it works. And it's not that we can't figure that out. It's just we have to really manage the expectation, because, if we get it to work and it looks great, but the customer had something else in their mind, right? We have to, and we've got a process for all three. So quite frankly, at any of those stages, we are really good at making sure that the end product is always way better than what it came in at. Because at the end of the day, like you said, or someone said, it's the consumer that makes the choice. If the consumer sees a good product, they like it visually, and they're willing to buy it, that's who we're trying to please, not anybody else.
So Mark, our process is, today it's pretty simple. I'm not quite sure it's scalable yet. We're still trying to figure that process out. How do we scale as a company? It is an interview process. So whether you come to us through a referral, which we have many that do that, we do advertise on TV. That's where most of our leads come from. And prior to COVID, Peter and I would go into pretty much every trade show that was out there.
Pitch events
and trade shows where people were, pitching, their idea. So that's how we generated our leads. But mostly today, it's based on referrals or advertising on TV. And it is an interview process. We do interview clients that's been successful. They're interviewing us to see if they kind of like the way we work. And we're interviewing them because as we get further into this, now we're going into our seventh year soon, it's tricky because we've seen a lot of different, variables pop up. Sometimes the idea is not great, but the entrepreneur is just savvy, and we can tell that it's going to be a lot of fun working with someone like that. Whereas we have great ideas and we've got entrepreneurs that we know we're going to struggle with. So, it's important for us to kind of do that interview and see if it's a good fit, because again, at our age, it's not about the money. It's more about the successes. We literally want to make sure that anybody that hires us, not only are they getting their money back, their investment back, but obviously we want to turn them into a business. So, so far we're, well over 200 clients, and everybody has gotten to revenue has a production order. So again, it's extremely important for us. And that's why Peter and I are the only two people that interview these potential clients. If we had salespeople doing it and they weren't properly trained, everybody would be, a good idea. And we can't do that because our reputations is paramount here. We have to make sure that we're doing right by our clients. That is the most important factor that we both said early on when we started this business, that we are going to be customer centric. We are definitely going to make sure our clients leave happy.
I think we refer to it as a no asshole policy. Only the two of us could be the assholes. So.
Yeah. So again, our ideal client, I happen to have my own opinion. That's kind of why it works with Peter and I, as we both don't agree on everything. I like the napkin. The client that comes into us with an idea in their head, we struggle to get that down. And it takes a long time, and it's very difficult to work as a group, because we have a whole team here that gets involved. The person with the prototype, as Peter alluded to, whether they've hired an engineer to develop that prototype or they did it there on their own, they're really married to it and they don't want to change it. And even if it means, going to market with not such a great product, or more importantly, the price is just going to be too high to manufacture it, which means that the cost is going to be too high to the consumer, which means the consumer is just not going to buy it. Yeah. So we kind of like the napkin, because at that point, they were creative enough to get it down on something. Yep. And then our design team, our product designers, not our engineers, our product designers who are great at product design, we utilize them to, then render it, create this prototype or the 3D printed model. Then we utilize our manufacturer's engineers to do the final touches to make sure the product's actually going to work.
Right.
So that's, to me, the favorite client.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah. That is where, we can actually talk about Stack Tracks, right? Because they came into us with a very specific design, and we looked at it and go, no way. I don't care who designed that. That's just not the way this goes. And I give them a lot of credit for putting the trust in us and our team and actually going, starting from scratch. We have, a project that's probably our oldest client at this point. He had hired a team outside and said, I want a discount because I've already gotten this far. Well, the reality is that design pigeonholed us. And we're at the point now where we should have just started from scratch a year ago. But, he's so fixated on this is the way I've already paid for it. You know, when you pay for something that's wrong, the best thing to do is cut it off like cancer and start over.
Exactly.
That's your fastest.
That's hard for someone to do that. It really is. And we understand that. But, you are right. It's let us go save you the money. I'll get your money back on a better design that's going to sell versus making that horrible mistake. And look at people should be hiring us so they don't make those mistakes.
They should hire us to evaluate their process. Exactly. They should pay us 10 grand just to say, hey, am I on the right track here? Yes or no?
Right.
Because
God knows over 25 years, pretty much made every mistake you can make. And hopefully, we don't make that same mistake twice. But if we do, it's on us, not on the client. It's hard to bring a product to market. Everybody could do it. I mean, literally people could piecemeal this thing and they could get to market in 5 or 6 years. But by that time they did that, that product either A, would be already invented by somebody else, or it just wouldn't relate to today's,
I'm going to say it on Mark's podcast client. For the first time. I actually am changing my opinion of that. We used to say that, this is something, our checklist is anybody can do this. As I walk around our new facility and I look at the team that we have, and this goes back to me using the word I too often in my life, the reality is, I don't think people could do it. Our team does a fantastic job there. We're now at the point where we have so many individualized specialties in each area. Whereas before, when we were smaller, we had one or two that were working on multiple projects. The amount of understanding that our team has just from the project that we've been able to do, understanding, working and communicating directly with our manufacturers, they have become not just mini experts, they have become total experts in their position to get a product to do what it needs to do and be cost effective so that it can be sold with some margin so client can turn this into a business.
And I could see a couple things, like the interview process. I totally get that. In my industry too, that first meeting, now mainly via Zoom, it's just we want to make sure that we like each other. You could be the perfect client, ideal client financially, but if you're a pain in the ass, if I know you're going to be a headache over and over and over again, it's just not worth the time. I like taking brand new people that are just getting started. So kind of like the napkin idea where they're not emotionally tied to a prototype already and letting it go. They're hiring you for a reason. You tell them exactly the best way to go about it, how you know from your experience and your team. And this is how we can bring it to market and do it the most cost-effective way and hopefully get you to, revenue as soon as possible,
And again, those are our, happiest clients. Happiest clients as well. Yeah. I mean, all of our clients are happy they've gotten to where they are. But, the ones that really appreciate us, and let's mention Lindsay and Anthony, obviously they recommended that you talk to us for a reason. Again, great idea. I mean, really, really good idea, but better entrepreneurs. I mean, those two are going to be successful no matter what they do in life. They're just driven that way. They're just built that way. Yeah. So whatever that, I would have taken a product that on a scale from 1 to 10 was a 2 or 3 and still had, them hire us because we'd be successful, but they've got a fantastic product as well as the attitude to be successful. And those two will be somebody. Well, they already are somebody, but they'll be special soon.
100%. How many ideas have you guys had when people walk in and you're like, this is just the worst idea that I've ever seen in my 7 years?
So we say this a lot. We probably speak to 1,000 people a year. So that's 6,000-7,000 people we've spoken to over.
We're in high demand. Korea.
A lot. That's amazing.
So I would say, surprisingly, and this is why I'm prefacing it by this asked a lot, not many. I mean, maybe 20 ideas were just ridiculous out of 7,000. Wow. So yeah, it's,
I would not have guessed that. Definitely. Yeah.
It surprised all of us us too, and everyone that works here that, when they hear the ideas, they're like, wow, that's interesting. Right. I think everybody seems to find this wow factor, or maybe Shark Tank has educated enough people that the dumb ideas have now been turned into better ideas.
Right.
Yeah. Along the way, I think people are better. They have a better understanding of what works in the consumer product world. We've run into some ideas that you go, wow, it's probably a little bit beyond our scope. It's not a consumer industry product, but we have, it can be industry changers. And that's where, those ideas just need to go out and get proper funding, because that's, going up against like a Motorola or a General Electric, or that just takes a lot of capital.
Yeah. Again, I think people, they vet themselves. I think they don't want to call stupid idea. I think they understand, like, I think you're right. Maybe Shark Tank has educated a lot of people. Quite frankly, I don't even believe that we would be able to be in business the way we are if it wasn't for Shark Tank. Again, they've educated a vast amount of people that would, be our clients. Yeah. On what to do or what not to do, more importantly. So not a lot of bad ideas. I will tell you, there's been a lot of people that are tough to work.
I was going to say for your listeners, to educate them on one step further, even the good ideas, but it's the entrepreneur that just says, I know it all. I've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Those are the most dangerous ones, because those are the ones that getting it all figured out and having that last 5 or 10% that isn't figured out, that is the essence of your product. If you don't have that 5 to 10% that's not figured out is actually 100% in weighted scale.
Yeah.
And when they don't appreciate or value that is really what we're doing, it's the engineering components, getting it figured out, it's putting those components together, it's getting it all, that's where I would just say that, entrepreneurs need to understand. I get it. We're all trained that we have to see our vision through and don't take no for an answer. But sometimes you do have to stop and just evaluate, am I doing this the hardest way possible, or is there an easier way? And listen to some experts that have been through it and guide them through a better process, right? Yeah. And again, the steadfast way, the one that you're so focused on, is the one that costs you the most money. If you're flexible and adjust our biggest processes are designed for manufacturing. And I keep harping on that. But when you design something the way it can be manufactured cost effectively, you can start making products that are actually sellable. And then, we've met a lot of people that actually take that to heart, will go to China and spend 2 years developing a product. And they end up in a worse stage than the others do, right? Like you can't take that literal. Yeah. You have to be the CEO of your company. Don't micromanage it. Hand off to the experts what they can do for you. Take it back, be critical, and get what you want at the end of it. But also understand that, it's not about the idea. It's about the business behind the idea. How does that make money?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the one word that I look for when I'm interviewing, I don't even know if you know this, but I like to see humility. To me, that has to be the number one factor in us deciding on whether we're going to work together.
Because, I think that's why we work well together, because I look for flexibility, right? And humility. So both of us are doing that on every interview. That's how this works, right? Because it really is both. If you're not flexible, that scares me. If you don't have a little humility behind you, that scares him.
Just thinking about the guy that we interviewed yesterday that's hiring us again. What I like about him the most is that he's extremely humble. He just said, look, you guys are the experts. I'm going to take your lead on it. I have a vision and I get it that I'm not the smartest guy in the room. So quite frankly, Peter and I are not even the smartest guys that work here. So at the very end of the day, it's a huge team that Peter's right. Everybody has a specialty. They're smarter at their specialty than any other person is at their, at that same specialty. So, that's why we're successful as a company, is we've built an amazing team that cares about the client just as much as Peter and I do. They get up and come to, we call it work. It's really fun. They come to fun every day and they do their jobs and they love it. And they like the end result when they see that product being sold. That's, there's nothing more.
Well, it's a testament. We moved, we switched over to a flex schedule so they can work from home anytime they want. Because we want to create some flexibility for our staff, but also we have some parking issues around here. This
looks great.
It's mill building, but parking sucks. I'm going to tell you, I don't know when they take advantage of that. Like, they've been here more than when we didn't have the program.
Wow.
So it's a testament that, the work that's coming in is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The people we work with are amazing. I think Lindsay and Anthony will tell you, it is not all like hugs and kisses all the time. There's a real process to this, right? Things don't always work out the way you intend to. And it's never catastrophic, because we're going to fix it. It's just, going through our process to not invest into bad product is so stringent. And that is, again, because of both of us. We just don't want to see anybody stuck with product that is bad. And even then, there's understanding, right? I listened to the podcast that they were on. And we all learned more about metal tolerances in their product than anybody should ever know. And it's all for the better, right? Now we've got a product that's still cost-effective and amazing and works and functions the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, they were sharing with me about the process and like the whole metal thing. It was just interesting to listen to, because I have zero expertise in any of that stuff. So it was interesting to listen to at least one client of yours go through the process and the experience they had just from start to finish.
Well, it's and I think you actually in your podcast, you hit the right word. I mean, it's emotional, but it's passion, right? Because
yeah,
when passion about success comes out, you know, it might get a little ugly, but it's never, it's not detrimental. It's not like we're harming each other. It's just, you know, everybody's focused on the same way.
Right.
Come out, let's get it fixed. Let's get it done. And let's, you know, let's a little bit of logic to get through it is what we have done. And it's, you know, I think every project has that where you don't know what it is,
yeah.
But that's why you have us as experts, because right. Whatever been so far in two, you know, it's in 6 years, we've never not solved it. And we've always come up with a better solution because of that, whatever that little thing is. It was smiley faces on Cutie Foodie, right? Like you never know. It's sometimes the simplest thing that you just don't think that it's, it causes you to think harder, make a solution and move on from it.
That's cool. So I know you guys have had over, like you said, 200 products go to market. What is, you've had a handful on Shark Tank or at least a few that I remember. What's been your most successful product to date? If you're allowed to say something like that, I'm not really sure. But
the one that we were right in the beginning of was Eggmazing. You know, they've done an amazing job of growing that product and company. Again, I think they came to us because they didn't have any knowledge of going to manufacturing. They had a really good idea. I think also it was, I'm not sure everybody was excited about the product as we were, because, you know, you look at it like, well, you're going to put a, you know, an egg decorator out there. I mean, we've been coloring eggs the same way for 30, you know, 3,000, 2,000 years. You know, we just saw something that was like unique. We understood that there's a model here. And look,
it defies all reasonable thoughts. I mean, you know, if you watch Shark Tank, you don't want a seasonal product because you're making money during a short period of time. So that's a negative. You're talking about holiday Easter, which, you know, it's extremely important holiday, but it's not like Christmas or even Halloween. It's just, you don't think of a lot of sales around Easter other than for chocolate bunnies.
Yeah.
So it just defied all logic that it would be as successful as it was, but it was, we call that product a disruptor. I mean, it changes really the way you would decorate Easter eggs. I mean,
it's gone viral quite a few times.
It's gone viral. And it's a product that, you know, that'll define how you decorate Easter eggs moving forward in our life.
The inventor himself is just such a humble, you know, I love Scott to this day. I wish from day one, I'm glad to see his success in that, right? It's just it's an amazing guy, amazing product, and to them and their journey.
And he was a hustler and he was not afraid. He wasn't afraid of the camera. He would dress up in a bunny suit. You know, they obviously got onto Shark Tank because of their
characters.
Their characters, exactly. Yeah. And
but they also had a product. And that's they were the perfect TV marriage there. They were the characters, but they also had an amazing product. So, you know, and again, look, we've got several others. You know, Unshrinked has been a very successful product for us. It's something that, you know, Des, again, is just a very determined entrepreneur. Lava Lunch actually kind of came to us in a much different fashion, but that is a heated lunch bag. So if you go to lavalunch.com, you can find us on Amazon. That is just a product that surprisingly, I can't believe how many lunch bags sell every day.
Yeah, like it's just like, I mean, I grew up with lunch bags, and it's just, I remember you telling this when you and I met, like how successful it was. I'm like, it's a lunch bag. Like, how is something like that so common, like so successful, you know, comparative to other ones? What is it? You said it's a heated lunch bag.
Yeah, so there are heated lunch bags out there, but you have to plug them in. We developed a product that you actually heat a couple bricks that have been formulated to
a patented process
that we own that happens to keep the heat, you know, inside. So you essentially drop the bricks into a microwave, heat them up. You heat up your food in a casserole dish and you sandwich your food amongst these two bricks, and it keeps your lunch hot for 5 hours. So it's an extremely cool product. We sell a lot of them.
And it's got the cool name too. Like, so one, Lava Lunch, like lava volcano hotness, Lava Lunch, like the alliteration. Like there's just a lot of little things like that that I think can also help sell a product as well. You know?
Yeah, I'm a little embarrassed. I think in our early days, we were the ones that came up with most of the names. Thank goodness we only had 6 or 7 clients. I think Eggmazing, or maybe most of them came to us.
Yeah.
Our team does an amazing job discovering, you know, the hardest part is finding the name that's available.
Understand
that any two words have been taken since 1998, right? .com. And you don't want a .us. You need a .com still just for, you know, is for people. Consumers still don't type in or don't think to type anything in other than a .com. Well, that .com then has to be available on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok these days, right? So
yeah.
You're not unified across the board. So any, you know, if there's a kid in Sri Lanka that took the name and has never used it on Twitter, you got to start over because you need to own that entire. Now, the good news is if you find that name and that domain and all the assets that go with it, it actually makes your trademarking a little bit easier because, you know, no one has acquired any part of those aspects. And now you can go off and figure out if it's worth getting trademarked or not.
Yeah. No, that makes all sense in the world. When you guys started this, like what was like, it sounded like you guys hit the ground running pretty quick. Did you have any early challenges when you first started, like just the company in general? And I guess what was like the first early success you had? Maybe you got, you know, it sounded like you guys had a handful of pretty successful clients right away. But what were some of the early challenges and successes when you started 52 Launch?
Oh, man.
Yeah. For me, it was, outsourcing the areas that we needed to outsource. Neither one of us are videographers. We're not even photographers. So, you know, trying to find somebody to do that for us. We're 52 Launch and not 52 Turtle. The whole word launch means, you know, you want to skyrocket into the atmosphere. We like to do things quickly. So that was our competitive advantage is that we can get you launched sooner than most companies. So again, that was the challenge. But again, we looked at this as a long-term play, but we still learn every single day something new. We're always growing, just as, you know, our whole space is growing these days. The internet's changed. Social media is changing almost every week, it seems like. So we have to keep up with it. And we're bringing in more talent. Almost every quarter, we're hiring new talent. So that was the biggest challenge, is finding people to do the work that we needed and getting it done quickly.
Well, and I think our process there, it was all a challenge, right? Because, you know, going through an A through Z process, first of all, the A through Z that we thought, there's a lot of letters in between that, you know, we're like, oh man, we do have to do that better. We're going to need this.
Yeah.
And we really outsourced everything until we realized that is a position that needs to come in-house. And we still do that every day, right? Like, we've never hired until we absolutely know this is making the cut. This is exactly what needs to get done. So like something like a copywriter, you know, we used to do that freelance until we realized, like, hey, if we can get the copywriting done much earlier, and then we hired Sarah, who's our part-time person doing it to full-time, it just sped us up dramatically, right? But we don't make those decisions lightly. Like, we've every step along the way, the industrial design team, right? Like, understanding that not going with engineers first. And we started off looking at engineers to help us out, and look at, they're an amazing group, but they will tell you every way not to make something and why you shouldn't make it at all. And that's not what we needed, right? We're, Dan and I are both yes people. Yeah. If you have it, like, look, you can't tell me whether you believe that we put a man on the moon or not. You know, if we can put a man on the moon, we can freaking make a fork that's got some sort of a handle on it, right? Like, it's not. Someone's made this somewhere before, so we just have to go and learn how, where, and what was made. Like Dan said, you know, catching the video, which just means watching a lot of YouTube videos to figure out what's hip, what's cool, what's, you know, the drone shots, like, what's his name? Brennan was in here just prior to the podcast testing out some new lights. And I'm like, oh, that's how they get that shot on YouTube or on TikTok, right? So, you know, it's just being hip and trendy. And that's where we just have an entire team that like gets there. But again, we were really good at the selection process, and our team has actually become better at actually selecting the better talent now in those chairs that we have for our clients.
Yeah. So you guys are coming up on your sixth year anniversary. What do you see for the future of 52 Launch? Do you plan on doing this, you know, till the end of time? What do you see for the future of it?
Well, we just opened Chicago as a territory beginning of this year. And we'll argue right now that to me, the leads coming out of Chicago, trust me, people out there, Boston's my favorite city in the world. But the leads coming out of Chicago have been just
phenomenal.
Really? Oh yeah. We're so happy that we knew that Chicago was an entrepreneurial hub to begin with, but yeah, the ideas coming out of Chicago have been fantastic, and fortunate that we're working with quite a few clients now out of Chicago. Yeah. So our goal would probably be in the fall to probably move somewhere in Texas, maybe Austin, start marketing in that area. But yeah, we do want to have some offices around the country that are, you know, hotspots for entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
We're going to have at least two or three this year.
The scalability of this will always be our headquarters. So all of our talent will be hired here. I mean, again, maybe we'll have a little bit of satellites in the different towns and markets that we go in.
Yeah.
But I think, like Dan alluded to, our biggest, not challenge, the one thing that we're going to figure out this year is, how do we scale ourselves, right? How do we get that decision process in place to make sure we don't take on the wrong client. Because, you know, you can imagine if we can't get to the finish line with a client, that would be a problem. And that's what we want. And for us, you know, now we actually established that, you know, advertising in the two markets have been relatively the same in terms of numbers. There's a need for what we do. There's a lot of people that sound like what we do, but they get you to a point where they'll say, okay, we'll do everything except make your product so you can go and try and get a license deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at, first of all, they're using the wrong terminology. A license deal is if I want to go to Disney or I want to use Batman as a character on my product, I have to go and acquire the license to do that. Right. Or if I want to use, you know, one of the NCAA basketball logos, I have to go get permission and get a license to use that. Yeah. They're really talking about as a royalty. In order to get a royalty, you have to do the same process that our clients do, and that's build the business first. When the business exceeds your capital, that's when you can go and find a Mr. Wonderful, and it's an easy transition. They'll give you money, and they will take over and turn it into a royalty agreement. So they're taking all the financial responsibility. They're giving you some cash for your business, and you're still getting a paycheck in the mail every week, and now you have no stress and headache. Well, they have the scalability, right? Like if they've got all the networks and all that, like, That's the perfect royalty agreement, but everyone has to do the work. There is no shortcut. And I said this on our own podcast. If you're not confident in bringing your own product to market and you're trying to sell your idea or you're trying to license or royalty your idea, you don't believe in your idea. People who we've seen what people who believe in their idea, like Anthony and
passion,
they are going to succeed because they believe in their idea. Anything short of that, your idea is going to fail.
Yeah.
If you're not running it.
Yeah. So that, getting back to your original question, like one of the biggest challenges to me, it was the talent. But, you know, secondary to that is having someone tell us that they want a licensing deal or what they really mean is a royalty deal. And, you know, you've said it also in one of our podcasts. If you thought of this idea 5 minutes ago, what is it worth? It's not worth anything because you haven't executed on it. So, you know, I was hoping that Shark Tank would have educated people on that aspect, that, you know, you're not going to get a royalty deal on an idea. Someone has to physically actually get to manufacturing the product and have an inventory to even see if that inventory is going to sell.
Right.
And then once it sells, what did it cost you to acquire a customer? All of that stuff has to be answered before any smart investor or individual would invest in anything. You have to have at least that foundation done. So yeah, we're not a company that buys people's ideas. And we've heard a couple of fantastic ones recently that I would love to write a check for, but it's just not what we do. We help people get their ideas to market. We don't actually take someone's idea and do it ourselves.
I think the next 3 years, I think we already are an international company because we've got clients all over the world, but I'd like to be, you know, our goal, I think, is to be a national company with satellite offices or offices in, you know, 10 to 15, maybe 20 of the major cities in the United States.
Yeah.
Or we have a hub.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. So with that being said, as far as you two go, do you guys ever picture yourself completely, like, because you do this, you know, like you said, like, this is fun for you. So you don't, yeah, I know it's work, but like having a fun job, like, do you picture yourselves like 100% ever completely retiring? Do you think you'll always do something in this space until, like, you know, maybe you physically or mentally can't anymore?
Yeah, I think it's the latter for me. I mean, if I physically can't do something, I guess I'm restricted to not doing all this stuff. But yeah, I don't really, I haven't, honestly, Mark, I haven't considered what I've done over the last 10 years work.
That's awesome.
I get up and love to, you know, be at the office every day. I love meeting people, certainly love helping people. Yeah, I don't really see me doing anything different. I'm sure Peter feels the same way.
Yeah.
We love what we do. We want to be a part of other people's success. Man, I've always said this my whole life. If you do the right thing by people, you get rewarded. And whatever that reward is what you personally, you know, believe a reward should be. Some people think it's money. Some people just think it's, you know, a nice thank you. I think getting a referral is probably one of the nicest things that you can have happen as a company, because that means that someone really liked you.
Yep.
And to me, that's, you know, that brings a tear to someone's eyes when someone recommends you, and that's a good feeling to have.
Yeah.
I personally couldn't imagine retiring or what that's like. I can barely get through 9 holes of golf.
Yeah.
Skiing, I love it. You know, getting 2 days of skiing in here and there is fun, but I, you know, need to get back. It's a good break, but I'm not someone who can sit on a vacation for 2 weeks. Just not my style.
Yeah. And we're talking a lot about our clients, but equally to the point, our the people that work for us are, yeah. I, we care about them like nobody's business. I mean, there are kids that work for us that, you know, I would consider my own daughters and sons.
They're
adults,
but we're just older than them. So we
can't. Yeah.
They're great people. Love hanging around them. Love being with them. Trust them wholeheartedly. And
There's a youthful energy definitely in our environment, right? Like, it's they can get competitive now at the ping pong table.
I love ping pong.
Yeah, well, you can join our tournament here. But they work hard too, and they go home and they're very responsible, and that's just an amazing thing to see at their age, how mature and how well adjusted and how talented they are.
Right.
Yeah, I always like asking that question though, just like with business owners, I find most of the time most business owners are passionate about what it is they do. So as far as retiring, like I actually enjoy golf, but still, like a round of golf is, you know, 4 hours, maybe five if with some drinks or something. But this, I don't know what the hell I do the rest of the day. I get bored out of my mind just sitting around. So I was just curious how other people would answer that question.
We're both in different spaces, but similar. I mean, you get to talk to people all the time. So you're hearing interesting stories every day. And how bad can that be? I mean, that's going to sound fun, right? Well, same for us. I mean, I'm sure that we're going to get calls. We probably already have this morning where we got to call people back and meet them for the first time and listen to their idea. It's fun. That's pretty awesome. I mean, there's not a day.
Actually, it's not much different than this.
Yeah. It's not a day that goes by that's something different has happened. And, so it's not boring whatsoever. So if I were a mailman and I was delivering mail every single day, and no disrespect to, you know.
No, it's a grind. They have to do it every mail day.
People,
it doesn't
change. Yeah, it doesn't change.
Right.
Yeah. Our process, you know, we don't know what's walking in the door tomorrow. Right. So
it's
I mean, every product that we've done so far is unique, and it's got a unique set of circumstances, and it really has a unique marketing aspect. So, you know, we're not just dealing with the same. Our process is the same to get launched, but after that, it's just so unique on how it goes.
Yeah. So guys, I could talk to you guys all day because I just love the type of industry you're in. I think it's so cool. But to wrap it up, I always ask the final three questions to every guest. So I'd be curious, you know, with all of your expertise and experience up to this point in your lives, I would love to hear the answers to a few of these questions. So the first one is, what advice would you give someone who's looking to start their own business? Well, it could be a product, but you know, somebody looking to start their own business, like a 52 launch or any other industry, what would be the first piece of advice that you would give to them?
Do it.
Yeah.
If you don't, you have to regret. And you know, whether it's a service or a product or whatever, you know.
And that's not our opinion. I mean, that actually comes from factual information because we have spoken to 7,000 people. Right. The biggest regret is, you know, I thought of this thing 13 years ago or 18 years ago. And, you know, and I've seen versions of my product come out and I'm just tired of looking at it. Well, yeah, it's, you know, look at, not everybody is built to go through the grind of bringing a product to market. It's one of the reasons that we have, you know, a dozen or half a dozen references on our proposal so you can call people. Look at, there are people that are on there that, you know, have yelled at us. There are people on there that, you know, on any given day say, oh no, don't hire them. But in the end, they're on there for a reason because they are happy, but they went through a tremendous grind to get there. And we're not hiding that. It is a grind. If it wasn't, every person in this world would be an entrepreneur. There wouldn't be any workers. Everybody would own their own business. It's hard, but it is extremely rewarding. Maybe other than real estate, if you bought it right, bringing a product to market and controlling your income, to me, that's how you build wealth. It's a great way to do it. And Amazon has leveled the playing field for everybody. No longer do you have to, you know, say, I want to get into Walmart. No, you just get on Amazon.
That's
where everybody shops. And if you've got a unique proposition, it'll sell. If it starts to sell, you're going to make money. And again, you're making money 24/7. It's a great side hustle that can turn into a, you know, full-fledged career.
Totally. My father told me when I was in my early 20s, like, if you want to be financially wealthy, be your own boss. Just figure out a way to be your own boss and just make money on a consistent basis. He's like, it's going to be so much more rewarding long-term. Just emotionally, just financially, it's like, be your own boss.
I mean, it's hard to be your own boss because it comes with all the challenges that you don't see when you're an employee.
Right. You're answering to somebody. You're always, someone is your boss. Whoever's writing you the check or lending you money, those are your bosses, right?
Right.
So even when you're self-employed, there's some people you do have to answer to. And sometimes that's your boss, right? Like, what are you doing now?
But it is extremely rewarding.
Yep.
Just go do it.
No, I love it. I think that's great advice. Second question would be, if you could tell your 18-year-old selves one thing, what would you tell them?
Invest in Apple or Google.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could go back 8 years ago, I would have bought Google, even though it was a silly name.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Now, for me, it would be, I came out of college and, you know, I helped my family start a business, and I should have just, the responsible Eastern European thing, I'm like Gary Vee in that regard, it was my responsibility. I should have left. I should have gone and just found my own, I would have been here sooner versus going through that career and then realizing that's, that was something I had to help them to do versus what I needed to do. So,
Both good answers, though. What were you going to say? Well,
yeah, but mine was a joke, but I would say, look, I was an entrepreneur when I was 12 years old. So I literally made money when I was 12 and made a lot of it. When I was in my 20s, I could buy anything I wanted to. And I was a hustler. I went out and worked and grinded it out. So, I got that bug early on and knew that I could never work for somebody. I needed to take chances almost every day.
Yeah.
To get where I've gotten. And again, I've made a number of mistakes, but in the end, it's allowed me the opportunity that I never dreamed that, I would ever have taken those chances.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. But I mean, I know the first answer was a joke, but I mean, investing in Apple or Google when they first came out, you'd be,
we wouldn't be
very, very wealthy right now. Yeah. So guys, last question for Boston's Best episode here that I would love to hear your answers to is, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how would you two define success?
An unattainable goal that you keep striving for. And then when you look back, you realize you are successful.
Yeah.
Like, I think people imagine the success is this nice box that you get, like a gold watch thing. It's not the truth. Because once you are successful at this, you realize, wow, there's another step. Like, there's
goalpost moves.
Yeah. And so, I think when you look back and look, I equate this to there's normal people and then there's entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Like a normal person who can grind through that 40 hours a week, do it day in, day out for 40 years. Those are the real heroes of the economy. They'll never understand taking the risk to do that next level or get to that next, but they'll also never complain about like they don't have, they can't afford, they couldn't put their kids through college and that stuff. To me, success is defined by what you want it to be. For me personally, it is really a matter of, if you can go to the next level, you've only got one shot around this planet. Yeah. Like, don't stop. Why would you stop? And, if you don't succeed at it, dust it off, go back up, learn what you failed at, and just go again.
Right again. Yeah.
There's no shame in failure. In fact, I think failure is part of success. And I think you fail more than you succeed. So just get through that failure part quickly and learn from it. Don't try and swallow it and bury it. Just learn.
Yeah.
Short answer for me is just be in control of your own life.
Yeah.
I mean, not having to answer to really anybody. I mean, if you've got a great wife and family, they're not telling you what to do. They're gonna they're gonna give you as much rope as you need. But to me, the reason I consider myself successful because at the end of the day, I don't really worry about a lot. I know I do the right thing 99% of the time, and I'm in control of my own life. I don't have to. Now, again, if I had $100 million more in the bank, would that make me happy? No, it wouldn't. I really don't define success with how much money you have. It's more about how happy you are.
Yeah.
I know Peter likes to ski in the winter, and he goes, he leaves here on Fridays in the winter to get skiing in for the weekend. And he wouldn't be able to do that if he had to, work for somebody or if he had to answer to somebody else. And, I'd like to take, some time off and do what I like to do. So to me, that's success. It's just, being in control of your own life and not having to worry about, all the minutiae that happen every day.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more to both of what you both said. Like for me, when I first thought of that question to ask is like the final question, I initially was thinking maybe subconsciously it was going to be like a monetary answer. No one has really said a monetary answer. I don't know if COVID has something to do with it, but just the last couple of years, just like for me, you got Peter and Joyce skiing. Like I take one afternoon every single week and I'm a member at the Framingham Country Club. And that is my day. I just go out, I stop work around noon, I have lunch, I tee off around 1:30. And that's just my afternoon that week. And it's just like, it's just something I do for myself that I just enjoy doing. And it's just like, because mentally it helps you just, it allows, you're not just so stressed out over working like 24/7. As an entrepreneur, your mind's always going. So I just like having that that one afternoon for myself every single week. And that's just my day to just relax, bring clients, bring friends, just have a day, you know, have a few beers and just make a day out of it. I suck at golf. Like, it's not like, cause I'm like trying to compete to be on like the PGA. I'm terrible, but it's just like a way to just get out into nature and, you know, swing the club.
That's awesome.
Well, Mark, we have some golf products that we can introduce you to make you a better golfer. Make your
golf game better.
I'm open to any suggestion. To be honest, like the last 2 years when I joined Framingham Country Club, that's when I really started playing a lot more consistently. Before that, I enjoyed it, but I went out like a handful of times a year. So there's a reason why I'm not good. I've gotten a lot better the last 2 years, but, you know, hold me up next to somebody else. I'm still not very good, but I'm getting there. So I'll take you up on some of those offers. I'll look into them.
I have a question for you, and then we can wrap this up. But where do you see Boston's Best? Because personally, I actually like, and your concept of this podcast, I think, is extremely needed. There's a lot of entrepreneurs in Boston. I think there's a lot of businesses that just need, you know, they're all working hard to get there. But where do you see your podcast going? Because I also see that, you know, we have a lot of clients that could probably benefit from being on, like Lindsay
Yeah. I mean, so it's funny. So I initially, 2 years ago around this time, so we're recording this in mid-February, it was January, February of 2020. I thought of the podcast in general as a way to meet more business owners. You know, just in general, I do a lot of work with business owners, entrepreneurs all have the same mindset in general. I just like being surrounded by those type of people, but I didn't really know what the hell. I was like, I don't know how the hell to start a podcast. And then COVID hit and I was like, okay, let's just change the reasoning behind starting it just to help promote local businesses. I lived in Framingham. I've been here now for 4 years. It was only 2 years at the time. So I was like, initially it was called Boston's Best of Metro West to try to get to learn, meet more business owners just around me to network and help promote. And then
Boston's good. I'll do it.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It does. But it has a really good ring to it. But I didn't want to limit myself to just the Metro West area anymore. I just wanted like kind of Massachusetts. So I dropped the Metro West part. I think the Facebook page is still Boston's Best to Metro West because they wouldn't let me change it to Boston's Best. But the goal, I mean, I would love to have any and all entrepreneurs from customers and clients that you guys have had to help promote them. There's really no limitations as long as they're Massachusetts based for the most part is really what I just want to help promote local businesses and then create this community in this network. We just had an event a couple of weeks ago at the Mighty Squirrel in Waltham. So we had a whole bunch of the guests from Boston's Best together. And I know a few people that are now working together. Like they've just got some synergy and they've networked and now they're working with each other and collaborating on different ideas and stuff. So it's just kind of a way to just get business owners together and just kind of create a community. I didn't really expect, I had no idea what to expect out of the podcast. And it's just kind of created a really cool network of a bunch of people. And it's done really well. We've had a new episode every week. So this has been really cool to see it grow. As far as the future, I really don't know. Like, I'm just going to keep this going. Like, this is something I can do for fun on the side. I love what I do, but this kind of, you know, talking to you guys for an hour is just kind of a fun way to break up the week from talking about, especially right now, the market. The last 6 weeks, the market hasn't done so well. So it breaks up those conversations. And it's been fun to do. I have no idea. If there was a way I can monetize this in a way and make this a full-time thing, I'd love to talk to new business owners every single day. It's just like such an easy, fun thing to do. But for now, just going to keep things going and see what comes from it, I guess. I don't really know. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thank you very much for coming on Boston's Best, talking 52 Launch. I think what you guys do is so unique. It's cool. And now I have a couple ideas. One of them came to me that I had when I was like 10, and it just like resurfaced as you and I, the three of us were all chatting. So I'll chat with you guys about it and see if it's legitimate.
You have that effect on people.
Yeah. So when we go offline, I have to ask you a question as well.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the time. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.